This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 43 was recorded on August 5th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Luke Groman is back with us today, and this episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplug.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing. And right now, they're offering Macro Voices listeners a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Luke, what got your attention this week?
Yeah, something that happened 2 weeks ago, Eric, that we think may be a really important macro data point, but which was seemingly ignored by most U.S. macro analysts, which was, and the headline said, as market matures, central banks conclude that a former gold agreement is no longer necessary. And this headline hit on July 26th. And, you know, to take a step back, when we were in London last back in January, we had heard rumblings at that point that the central bank gold agreement, or CBGA, would not be renewed in 2019 for the first time since its 1999 reception. It had been signed originally in 99, renewed every 5 years hence until this year. 10 days ago, this headline from the ECB made it official. And so anytime something happens for the first time in 20 years, we think it pays to take note. But because the matter at hand is about gold, it appears to have been roundly ignored by most U.S. macro analysts. And so, you know, by way of background, the original CBGA was basically a promise by signatory EU central banks not to sell more than 400 tons of official gold per year. And as a practical matter, sales had tapered over the past decade to near zero anyway. So there's an element of this just being a formality, but this announcement made it explicit when they said this: signatory central banks confirm gold remains an important element of global monetary reserves, and none of them currently has plans to sell significant amounts of gold.
Luke, why do you think it's so important that this agreement is apparently not being renewed for the first time in 20 years?
Well, since 2013, global central banks have bought around $150 billion in gold while selling about $8 or $10 billion in treasuries on net. But up until this point, the foreign central banks buying this gold have been quote-unquote rogue nations, right? It's been China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkey, Venezuela, etc. There have been a number of EU nations that have repatriated gold, including Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands. But we think there's a real chance that the non-renewal of this CBGA means that EU nations may be about to join the list of quote-unquote rogue nations in reserving increasing amounts of gold going forward. And so we think investors need to begin thinking about the implications of EU central banks beginning to join the rogue nations lists in either outright buying gold or preparing themselves for a Bloomberg headline hitting the tape saying that the Bundesbank increases gold reserves by X billion dollars this month, or the Banque de France reserving more gold this month. Interestingly, this is not the only news in the last week or two on central bank or official buying of gold. So, for example, on July 19th, the World Gold Council wrote that central banks bought more gold in 2018 than any time since the early 70s. This is where gold comes into its own as it fulfills central banks' three core objectives: safety, liquidity, and return. Then, at the, you know, if you stretch back to the end of June, you had the CME, which is a U.S. systemically important financial institution, or SIFI, puzzlingly pairing up with the Shanghai Gold Exchange in what appeared to us to be a step to help the PBOC with the goal that they stated, at least as far back as 2015, of using gold to help internationalize the yuan, with a news release headline that said CME Group and Shanghai Gold Exchange to launch new gold futures contracts connecting the global market participants to Chinese gold markets. And so you're going to be offering a gold contract in both dollars and in offshore yuan through the CME. You know, and if we take a step back even a little further, you see headlines saying Hungary boosts gold reserves tenfold, citing safety concerns and the need to hedge structural international financial system changes. And that was back in October of last year. And more recently, Poland announced that they had bought 100 tons of gold in the first half of this year, bringing their reserves to 228 tons. And Poland as an EU ally or one of the closer EU allies. And Poland went on to say they plan to repatriate more gold from the Bank of England. That was on July 7th. So, you know, of course, Hungary and Poland aggressively buying gold were just the latest, as we noted earlier. You know, 14, 15, and 2016, 17, you had the Netherlands and Austria and Germany doing the same thing. And so when we add it all up, you know, in total, central banks bought a record amount of gold in the first half of the year, which is a very curious thing to do in the midst of a dollar shortage. You know, the FT noted last week that central banks purchased a record $15.7 billion of gold in the first 6 months of the year in an effort to diversify their reserves away from the U.S. dollar as global trade tensions continue to simmer. And so, like we said, it's a curious thing to do in the midst of a dollar shortage. And we think there's some signaling value here.
Yeah, it is definitely pretty interesting, Luke. You know, we don't need a gold agreement anymore because gold's a barbarous relic. Meanwhile, all the central banks are buying it hand over fist. So why do you think that this is happening along with central bank gold purchases, U.S. Treasury sales over the past 6 years that you noted earlier? What's the backstory? What's going on? Why is this all happening?
Well, I think to answer that question, Eric, we need to take a step back on two different fronts. So first, we've got to go back to 2000 and understand that when the tech bubble burst, those problems were kicked upstairs to the housing bubble and by extension to the U.S. banking system. And so then in 2008, when the housing bubble burst, we kicked that upstairs to the sovereign level with all the bailouts. And so the question then is, where do you kick a global sovereign debt bubble up to when it bursts? You know, when you have some $14 trillion plus in sovereign debt at negative nominal yields, I don't think that many investors would argue that we're not in a global sovereign debt bubble of some description. But when it bursts, where do you kick the problems up to? And that's the first point I think we need to think about for context. The second point is that the last time the world was moving toward a recession with advanced economy sovereign debt levels as a percent of GDP as high as they are today was about 100 years ago. And that time around, the sovereign debts of the six biggest industrial nations all collapsed on a real basis. So whether it was the UK or the US or Germany or Japan or France or Russia, the real value of the sovereign debt of those six nations fell anywhere from 75 to 100% on a real basis over time horizons varying from just a couple years to a decade to, you know, a little over a decade. And, you know, the academic research on this clearly shows that there's really only a few ways out of the situation we find ourselves in, really just two ways. It's either default or it's inflation. And default's not really an option because the sovereign debt, and in particular treasuries, underpin the entire financial system structure. So the choices you really have left are inflation or inflation, and that's if everything goes well. So fascinatingly, because this predicament that we're in right now in terms of the levels of sovereign debt heading into a slowdown has really only been seen in emerging markets in the last 40 to 60 years, you know, a Western sovereign debt problem is considered every bit as inconceivable as home prices falling nationally was considered prior to 2005. And if you recall, few people thought that home prices could fall nationally in 2005, even though they had in the 1930s. And the same thing appears to be happening here with Western sovereign debt on a real basis. The global economy is clearly slowing notably, possibly heading into a recession. There's many people talking about this. You know, far fewer investors, though, are asking, where do we kick a sovereign debt bubble up to? And the only possible answer is the currency, as we discussed before, you know, about the last time advanced economy sovereign debt was this high back in the 20s. And so this phenomenon has been seen more recently in the 80s and 90s in a variety of emerging markets when their sovereign debts got too high, which if we take all of that as background, and then it brings me back to your original question about why are these central banks buying gold this way? And specifically, why do we think the CBGA was not renewed for the first time in 20 years? And to directly answer your question, we think what the ECB's press release on the non-renewal of the CBGA was is just the latest and strongest hint, possibly, of the answer to the question, you know, where do we kick a sovereign debt bubble up to? The answer is it gets kicked upstairs to the currency, or said differently, it gets kicked upstairs to gold.
Okay, you said just a minute ago it's perhaps the latest or strongest hint, which seems to imply that there were others. So can you give examples of the others?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, maybe the best way to answer that is to read the words of the former chief economist of the IMF, who was a gentleman named Ken Rogoff. He wrote an article in Project Syndicate. It was reprinted in the Wall Street Journal in 2016. And so this is Rogoff from May of 2016. I am just proposing that emerging markets shift a significant share of the trillions of dollars in foreign currency reserves that they now hold, China alone has official reserves of $3.3 trillion, into gold. Even shifting, say, up to 10% of their reserves into gold would not bring them anywhere near the many rich countries that hold 60 to 70% of their admittedly smaller official reserves in gold. Why would the system work better with a larger share of gold reserves? The problem with the status quo is that emerging markets as a group are competing for rich country bonds, which is helping to drive down the interest rates they receive. With interest rates stuck near zero, rich country bond prices cannot drop much more than they already have, while the supply of advanced country debt is limited by tax capacity and risk tolerance. Gold, despite being in nearly fixed supply, does not have this problem because there is no limit on its price. I don't want to create the impression that by shifting into gold, emerging markets would somehow benefit at the expense of advanced economies. After all, the status quo is that advanced economies, central banks, and treasuries hold vastly more gold than emerging markets do. And a systematic shift of emerging markets will bid up its price. But this is not a systemic problem, and in fact, a rise in gold prices would close part of the gap between demand and supply for safe assets that has emerged due to the zero lower bound on interest rates. So it's interesting, everyone's talking about a risk-free asset shortage with a greater percentage of global sovereign bonds getting more negative by the day in terms of the yield. And here we have the solution to the problem, global central banks acting on the solution to the problem, and yet very few investors are paying any attention to it at this point. And so to me, the setup for gold seems very positive. Fascinatingly, all of this is happening just as mainstream business publications are getting comfortable enough to announce that, you know, for example, Business Week last week asking or saying that there's no escape from low rates. And then back in April, Business Week also had the increasingly famous "Is Inflation Dead?" cover, like I said, back in April. So look, in the short term, in my opinion, investors are increasingly understanding and rightfully so and focused on the short-term mechanical liquidity impact of what was announced last week or 2 weeks ago of $433 billion in treasury issuance in one quarter, which is going to suck up a lot of dollar liquidity. But what I think is also starting to happen here is they're beginning to see the forest for the trees and say, oh my goodness, the U.S. is issuing $433 billion in a quarter in a good economy. Yeah, I'm going to buy dollars. I understand that. But I'm not going to sell gold anymore on this. I'm buying gold because this is accelerating and I know how this ends. And so I think ultimately that's also the message of central banks buying gold. And I think specifically of this central bank gold agreement not being renewed for the first time in 20 years. You know, to us, you know, the bottom line is we still really like gold, and we think Bitcoin benefits from what we're talking about here as well.
Luke, one final question before I let you go. You've made a really, really excellent bullish argument for gold here. But for investors who may be considering acting on it, how do you feel about the timing of an entry? I mean, right now, we've just, in reaction to Donald Trump's tweet last week, we've seen gold prices rocket higher. As we're speaking early in the week, we're speaking on Monday. This won't air until Friday. But even on Monday, we were looking at above 1480 on the gold price. Is this a good place to be buying, or should people be waiting for a pullback?
You know, that's a great question, Eric. I have not looked at the technicals today. I imagine they're probably pretty stretched with given where we are. With that said, my understanding is that if you get, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Dalio or if it was Paul Tudor Jones. I think it was Paul Tudor Jones earlier this year that said, if you get over 15 or 1520 or something, it's going to go to 1700 in a big hurry. There's apparently like nothing but air on the chart to fill if that happens. And so depending on where you're positioned, whether you have any yet, whether or not, to me, I think that's the best way to think about it is all right, you know, you're probably due for maybe a little bit of a short-term just sort of consolidation, but just be cognizant that if it, you know, if it moves another 30, 40, 50 points higher from here, you might not get a chance for another, you know, $200. And that's how I would think about it in terms of scaling in, whether I have a position now or whether I'm adding to an existing position.
Well, thanks for another great interview, Luke. We look forward to getting an update from you in a couple of weeks. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by Top Traders on Plug.com. This podcast, which I highly recommend, is delivered to you by some of the world's leading practitioners and gives you an unprecedented insight into the world of trend following and other rules-based investment strategies, which have delivered outstanding returns for many decades. So if you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to toptradersunplugged.com/macro, where right now you can claim a free copy of The Many Flavors of Trend Following. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend. Have a great weekend, everybody.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.